more truth about markets in London with Max and Stacy on Resonance 104.4. That's right, Stacy.
Hey, London.
That's right.
Yeah. So, Max Kaiser.
Yeah.
It's officially July.
Yeah.
It's our weekend that Americans celebrate freedom from monarchy.
Right.
Taxation without representation.
Yeah.
Overthrow of those Brits.
Uh-huh.
With a little help from the French, which usually gets overlooked in the teaching of U.S. American history.
That's right. Without the French, there would be no America. That's right.
Yes. And of course, the French coming to our aid, the French monarch, I'm sure he soon regretted it as his head was bouncing down the Concordian steps.
Yeah, exactly. America and France are natural allies. Britain has always been a common enemy of France and America. And now we're seeing it again in the Gulf Coast, the Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was talking to this French guy last night. He's a well-known professor. When he was comparing Americans and French together, that they're two ideological-based societies. So they're equally arrogant, which is why in America, you know, there's often this perception that French are anti-American. It's because they have their own cultural arrogance, where he believes that the British are, merchants. So merchants can't afford to take either side, and they're just pragmatic people. They don't have an ideology. They don't think of themselves as, like, superior.
Yeah, you know, I read something interesting about the French government bailout of artists versus the art market. And This was a contrast between France and the Anglo-Saxon approach to the crisis. In France, the artists, for example, got a bailout by passing a law where they get a piece of any subsequent sales of their artworks. So if an artist sells their art to a collector, if that collector sells it again, then the artist gets a cut of the resale.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So you talk about ideology and cultural differences. In France, artists are considered much more higher up in the pantheon of the social strata than in the Anglo-Saxon world, and that has something to do with their belief in a exceptionalism. In America, of course, they have the same ideological snobbishness, but it's not tied to art so much. It's more tied to, I don't know, what is it tied to?
Well, I have this theory, and it's on my blog today, a blog entry I wrote on maxkaiser.com, and it's that both America and France are equally welfare states. And the crisis we're in at the moment, we're seeing that France, however, has extended too many rights that it cannot afford to extend. It can't afford, the government can't afford to provide free vacations and healthcare and pensions and early retirement and all that stuff. Whereas the U.S. is broke because it has taken too many rights. It can't afford to deprive so many people of their rights by incarceration, by bombing, by invasions.
Uh-huh.
So what do you think of that? So France has too many rights that it's trying to provide to too many people, and America is trying to deprive too many rights from too many people.
Well, there is a diminishing returns in the U.S., economically speaking. From obviously the big one is blowing way too much money on foreign wars with no return really at all. And as we found out this past week, the wars are just providing cover for money laundering and drug trafficking. So we learned, for example, that Wachovia Bank was involved in a huge multi-$100 billion worth of money laundering for Mexican drug cartels. This is a story that just was revealed, and they have been forced to pay a fine. There was nothing more than a fine required from them to pay. never mind an examination of how they may be contributing to the immigration situation, the economic degradation, the drug infestation, simply is treated like a misdemeanor and they should be fined. And so this is an example of complete ignorance of what constitutes a sound society. In the United States, they seem to have forgotten that you don't want your population hooked on drugs and laundering money all day as your primary source of revenue. In Europe and in France, they would say, you know, we don't want a population that is strung out on drugs and money laundering. So it's a completely different approach to how the value systems are different. So in the U.S., the value system is, I mean, I saw it, you know, today in the cafe, just sitting there, and this American woman comes in and just starts bossing people around like, hey, you, what's for breakfast? You know, just like this real arrogant attitude, this fat kind of undernourished, you know, fish-fleshed kind of homeless trailer park woman just ordering people around. But this, that's the American values. This is what you see all the time. They have this ill-placed sense of importance that, now that their economy is crashing, it's hopefully we won't be hearing much from them any longer.
Well, on my blog, I'm talking about the reason why I was provoked to write this is that there was a study done on the incarceration rate and how expensive it is in America to incarcerate. And they have charts going back all the way to 1880. And from 1880 to 1980, the percentage of the population incarcerated doubled. So you went from about 100 people per 100,000 Americans in 1880. And then in 1982, you had about 200 per 100,000. And then you could see the chart just takes off like a bubble. So you go from 200 per 100,000 in 1982 all the way up to just about 800, less than, 20 years later.
Yeah.
So the population quintupled or quadrupled in that time in just 20 short years.
Mm-hmm.
And yet crime rates going back the same distance have remained flat.
Right. And one thing I noticed also, which is interesting, is that in the United States, there's a real taboo against self-expression, whereas in France, it's much more celebrated. And, you know, living in France as we do, living in Paris, people are free to dress as they want, kind of kooky sometimes, and artists are venerated, and people have all kinds of crazy opinions. And it's all part of the public discourse. In the U.S., you know, you have to wear your uniform, whether you're in prison or whether you're in the conformity-driven dictate by Gap or Abercrombie and Fitch stores. And your thought is really channeled into a very, 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 very narrow discourse of right versus left, where any opinions outside of an extraordinarily narrow public discourse are considered fringe and dangerous. And as a result, of course, it feeds into the prison system, which is incredibly profitable. And if you look at companies like Corrections Corps of America, private prison operators, they're making a lot of money, you know, basically turning the population into...
So, but, okay, so let's move on because let's go. So let's talk about the UK because we're right here on Resonance 104.4 FM in London, the best radio station in the UK. And the new government, the Tory government, the Conservative government, has asked the people, what do you want? You know, what freedoms do you want to regain? What laws do you want to overturn? And lo and behold, Scrap Digital Economy Act, say the people.
Mm-hmm.
So the people want to get rid of a law favored by the monopolist and heavily lobbied for by the monopolist. So whether or not David Cameron will quickly pull out of this, you know, this experiment in talking to the people, you know, this is always, of course, a danger of any government talking to the people or trying to pretend that they're going to listen to them, is that the people generally don't want all of the wars, the violence, the spending, the, you know, the just the violence of government.
What was the actual law that they want overturned?
The Digital Economy Act. So basically, you know, outlawing any sort of criminal, any behavior online.
Uh-huh. What, related to downloads, I think?
Downloads, yeah.
All right. So they want to get aggressive against the so-called pirates. And I guess the public pushed back against this, and they said, no, we think that's too
invasive of privacy, and you can't deprive us of our rights to be online, you can't disconnect us, all that kind of stuff.
Right. So the public, this is where the public is focusing their attention, which is interesting. They see this as a major battleground in terms of the public's interest versus the private corporation's interest. And the UK government is like all governments around the world, they are trying to fit into this global scheme of expanding and extending copyright law, and which is great for copyright corporations, but terrible for the public domain, because as we've discussed on this show, all ideas come from the public domain. And after a short period of time, when they have a monopoly franchise value, they should return by law to the public domain. This way, you've got a healthy intellectual discourse and a public domain. One of the reasons why the culture is so debased by acts like Lady Gaga or other types of faux pop nonsense is because many of the ideas are trapped on corporate balance sheets, and they're not accessible. So there's the copyright cartel has effectively performed an intellectual mass lobotomy on the population, who are unable to access the historical precedents and ideological roots of the very things that make people human, because it's trapped on corporate balance sheets held by immoral copyright laws, which don't do anything for art or artists, but empower corporations to put up digital prisons online. And people want to be free from prison. They want to be free from their intellectual prison. So I think people's yearning to be free, I think that's why that would be a law that they would that they gravitated toward to get rid of.
What was I going to say on that? Because, anyway, let's move on. So, EU putting serious curbs on payouts to bankers. EU squares up to bankers and their bonuses. Where does that leave the city? So, the European Union is trying to restrict banker bonuses and tying their pay to... they're trying to extend, you know, basically introduce clawbacks. So if you crash the global financial system based on, you know, your very profitable quarterly trades,
mm-hmm.
They want a mechanism whereby you can, the governments can claw it back. But the city and their spokespeople in Downing Street, David Cameron and Theresa May and people like that are fighting back. They're saying that the financial services sector in the UK provides innovation and jobs and profit and money. We're wealth creators. What are your thoughts, Max Kaiser, on this?
They're not wealth creators. It's a utility. They should be regulated as a utility, and their utility value is to be a clearinghouse for risk and reward and allocation of funds. And they should not be given a position to override the system, make these incredible risky bets, and then get bailed out when the bets go wrong. I mean, imagine if you had the electrical utility service and you had somebody down there in the main switch of the electrical utility who had put in a jumper cable that bypassed the distribution of the electricity and put it into their own account. They just aggregated megawatts and kilowatts of energy, and they used that energy to speculate in the energy markets. And every time they made a bad bet, they got the government to bail them out. And every time they made a winning bet, they paid themselves a huge bonus. Anything that trickled through that they deemed as extra, that they were not concerned about stealing, they allowed the public to have as their electrical energy needs. Now, that's exactly what these bankers are doing. They're setting up shop on the floor of the exchanges. They're putting up co-located servers in the case of the New York Stock Exchange. They're siphoning off money. They're making bets with that money. When the bets go well, they keep the profits. When the bets go poorly, they get the government to bail them out. They're hackers. You know, they're saboteurs. And they've parked themselves into the financial system, and they're confiscating wealth. They're not adding any wealth. They're not adding any value. And they've convinced that the government that somehow they're innovators, which is misplaced. It's incorrect. The government, of course, one easy way to claw back the profits would be to simply raise interest rates to make the cost of borrowing higher, thus eliminating much of the gambling that goes on in the city of London. They need to raise that rate. If they don't want to raise the rate across the board, which would cut into people's mortgage rates, then they should just raise specifically the margin rate, the rate that is charged for speculators to borrow money to speculate. That rate should be increased. This would eliminate much of the problem. But for some reason, the Bank of England and the Federal Reserve Bank in Washington, even though it's within their purview to do so, refuse to address this individual rate. I believe it's because nobody in the press or in the public is pressing them to do so, and they just hope that people ignore the fact that they have this vital tool that they could use to dissuade speculation and economic catastrophe. But and so far, we're the only ones, and Jimmy Rogers has mentioned it also, that have even brought this up.
Well, we were talking about patents, and that brings me to the oil in the Gulf of Mexico, because you know, there's that Hurricane Alex went through, and BP yesterday admitted that huge amounts of oil have now washed up on shore, and it dispersed the oil into more, you know, fragile ecosystems. Mm. So their share price fell another 2%. But I see that there's this giant oil tanker in the Congo has exploded, killing 200 people. So again, you know, more and more we're seeing the cost of our refusal to progress past the monopolies that control the oil, our energy systems. For some reason, many people, you know, we see it all the time on our own site. People are very, very wed to the Saudi royal family. They very much, and Dick Cheney, they really like support these particular oligarchs. And it's one of the most fervent cults out there.
Yeah, well, it's a couple of points to bring up. First of all, I was unaware of this explosion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it happened this morning. It's on the telegraph.co.uk. I'm reading
but it happened in a country that people don't really you know, pay much attention to. What country was it?
The Congo.
Oh, right. So, these things, of course, when they happen in other countries, they get more attention, even though the energy is, of course, a global business. So to give more attention to one country over another makes no sense. But the other point, the big point, of course, is peak oil, which, again, nobody wants to recognize the fact that oil is running out. And this is why there's more and more push into more dangerous areas to drill, which is going to cause more catastrophes and more ecological damage. And the more ecological damage it's caused, of course, the less able the economy is able to function, grow, and create jobs, because the economy is a subset of the ecology. And if you destroy the ecology, you're going to destroy the economy. So the economy is being destroyed under a blanket of oil that really has no use. For 50, 100 years, the whole oil as an energy source has been obsolete. The only way, it just continues because the oil executives have taken over the industry. And back in the 70s, of course, they took the U.S. dollar off the gold standard. They put it on the petrodollar standard. And so everyone, as you point out, is wedded to this cult of oil that feeds the Saudi regime, and they feed these different regimes. But there's no economic purpose to it. We have other alternative energy, cheaper, more reliable, and more growth provoking. We have had for at least 50 years, but you know, more like 100 years. But you know, the people who are getting rich by abusing the system obviously have enough power to keep this bad equation in place.
Yeah, well, plus, because we have the sugar daddy of King Abdullah, right, that most Americans just don't have to think about, they don't have to worry about not having any manufacturing jobs or building innovation. But and so I want to go on to Andy Grove, the form, I guess he was one of the founders of Intel. But I want to first say on this Congo soil, so it's an oil tanker that exploded and it killed 200 people because dozens of mostly earth and straw constructed homes in the Congo village of Sang, 40 miles south of the regional capital, were engulfed in the blaze after the accident. Most of the people were, I guess they were home watching the World Cup. Speaking of cults, another part of the cult matrix. But Andy Grove from Intel is talking about how America has come to be where it is in the sorry state of everybody just working at Walmart, and this whole myth that we were going to have this knowledge economy and that it was okay to send all these jobs overseas. And he talks in particular about energy, about this all these batteries, the technology to develop batteries, and therefore the entire new energy system. None of it, he says, zero is being developed in the U.S. or manufactured in the U.S. It's all being developed and manufactured in Asia. And this is a very dangerous situation for America because of this. Mm-hmm. What do you think of this article? Did you read it?
Well, I know Andy Grove. I've been following his career for 25 years. And he's a fantastic innovator. And he came up with the concept of the corporate inflection point, where a company must completely reinvent itself and turn on a dime, and done that over at Intel when he was running Intel a couple of times. And it's a model that many corporations use today. But this idea that the battery technology is happening in Asia and not in the U.S., innovators are in Asia and not in the U.S., clearly the education in the U.S. is completely falling apart. And how can you expect to have engineers and innovation in a country that has no education and no education standards? That's one problem. Number two, the education system has been picked clean by the bankers on Wall Street, who decided to create education-backed collateralized obligations and other forms of derivatives, which are bundles of student loans that they wanted to trade back and forth. This just raised the cost of education to beyond what many people could afford and put a lot of people in debt. So when they come out of college, they have so much debt, they have to go into the industries that pay them the most, to pay down the debt the quickest, that naturally gravitate toward the most useless of the industries, like defense, surveillance, and other areas that are just completely worthless in the U.S., and away from doing research and doing things that are going to create real sustainable growth going forward in alternative energy and battery technology. So again, as the Wall Street has carved out all of the wealth and all the wealth creating ability, and you see this result in exactly what Andy Grove is talking about, a complete evisceration of any educational standards, innovation, engineering. It's all in Asia. Of course, Asia is very hungry to grow, and a lot of capital is being invested accordingly, and they're going to lead the world in these technologies and energies. They'll apply for patents, they'll get patents, and then the U.S. will have to pay licensing fees to all of these Asian countries to use these new technologies. So the whole pendulum of power is swinging away from the U.S. because the U.S. has, you know, spent itself, basically.
But and whoever controls the energy, you could see throughout history, then becomes the superpower. Whether at first it was whaling, and the whaling nations were the very most powerful nations, all those Northern European and Dutch countries. And then you had coal, which displaced whale, mm-hmm, oil, and that became the UK empire. And then you had oil, which the US controlled. And now you're going to move to alternative energy sources. We don't know. But there's another problem, which is that because of cheap oil and the relationship with the Saudis and Dick Cheney, and also the cheap goods at Walmart and the fiat, you know, the US dollar is the world's reserve currency, has afforded Americans that they could be stupid, basically. They could not work. But as he says here, There's more at stake than exported jobs. With some technologies, both scaling and innovation takes place overseas, such as the case with advanced batteries. It has taken years and many false starts, but finally we are about to witness mass-produced electric cars and trucks. They all rely on lithium-ion batteries. What microprocessors are to computing, batteries are to electric vehicles. Unlike with microprocessors, however, the U.S. share of lithium-ion battery production is tiny. So that's also another problem here, is that he's saying it's taken years and many false starts. And I've heard that so many times. It's like, because if you can't prove it instantly, if you're not an instant overnight hit, if you don't get, if you, as soon as you get voted out by the judges on, you know, American Idol or anything like that, it's like, let's move on quickly. Everything is very fast. So they don't, there isn't this system anymore where, you know, if you're not able to flip quickly as an IPO, then you, no capital flows to you.
Right. It's the difference between culture and consumerism. In culture, things ferment and it creates something dynamic and unique and wonderful. With consumerism, it's instant gratification. And the U.S. Yeah. has the emphasis on this instant gratification of consumerism and eschews culture and cultural values completely. There's nothing is culturally stewing in America that 5 years or 10 years down the road will emerge and blossom as something wonderful and uniquely American. It's all being leveraged and used as collateral to service the debt. I mean, when you have a debt load of $14 trillion and growing to $20 trillion, you know, you don't really have time to think about anything but servicing that debt. And that's, unfortunately, the only thing left is a preoccupying mindset. It's funny because I saw something on businessinsider.com, who is a cheerleader for this bankrupt model in the U.S., this business model, talking about debt panickers from all the way going back from Jefferson to today, the history of people in public panicking about debt, you know, and trying to make the case that debt is nothing to worry about. Mm-hmm. And of course, Reagan made the case that the debts are nothing to worry about. And the Republicans have picked up on that idea and repeated it many times. The debt is nothing to worry about. But the debt, unfortunately, now is such a preoccupation by every single American, corporation, individual, institution, and that this is why they're losing their competitiveness.
Well, I don't think debt mattered prior, post 1971. Once the U.S. went off the gold standard, it doesn't matter to the government or to corporations who are close to the government. It matters for everybody else. It matters for the population and citizens individually, and it matters to small business. But, you know, when it was a gold standard, and if a corporation or the government went into debt, they had to pay it with real money. Now they can just print it, and it's all fake for them. But I think it's very real for the population itself.
Right. It's different. The individual who is trying to struggling to pay down their debts, they don't have the ability to print up more dollars in their basement.
Exactly. And they don't have the ability. Obviously, they can't. Well, they can transfer maybe to the government, but the government is them. The corporations are not the population. They can transfer it to the government, to the population.
Yeah, and to tie the two together with this energy discussion, it's kind of interesting that in places like Germany, people have installed, and they have this in the UK as well, people have installed like devices.
Wind and solar, yeah, yeah.
On their homes, and not only are they heating themselves and being self-sufficient, generating their own electricity, but any excess electricity they're reselling to the government for a profit. So individual homes are becoming profit centers by their ability to generate excess electricity, energy than they themselves use. So, you know, that's quite a bit different concept than get into as much debt as you possibly can and never pay back the debt. You know, in these other countries like the UK and Germany, not only are people out of debt, well, in Germany anyway, for the most part, but they're actually creating positive cash flow based on their individual ability to generate energy and sell to the grid, the national grid. I mean, there's a great use for the government. People in the U.S. say the government has no use. Well, here's a good use for government. Accept all the excess energy that's being generated by the population and reallocate it to areas of the economy to lessen the cost of energy to keep your economy competitive.
Yeah, but Germany doesn't have, Exxon and, all the other oil companies listed on their stock exchange, or Chevron and, Shell and BP are also listed in the U.S. So, they have an oligarchy of oil, connected to the Saudi royal family as well. So they don't have a lobbying group, perhaps, that is as strong in Germany. So the Germans are allowed to be free because they don't have oil monarchs in their country.
Yeah, and plus talking about cult and cult-like behavior in Germany, they never have bought into the idea of buying real estate. They've always been renters. The idea has always been that the money you could be used more productively as an investment than in real estate, because real estate, the only reason real estate has been a good quote-unquote investment in the UK or the US is because it gets tax subsidies from the government and all kinds of other subsidizations. So it becomes an asset bubble, and only through being a bubble has it been a so-called investment. But if you remove all the props and the incentives and the various other ways that the market is manipulated by interested parties, real estate itself is not really much of an investment. So in Germany, they would rather put that money to work in a business, in a factory, in some other way. And as such, they are renters, by and large. They're not owners. They don't have mortgages. They don't like the idea of being in debt. Having a huge mortgage debt overhanging you makes no sense to the average German. Now, going forward, they have a huge manufacturing capacity. The population is not in debt. The government is cutting down all the existing debt.
But plus, let's not forget World War II. And, I've argued this before, and many people, again, on our site, this is the big interaction I have with other people, is that many people are invested in the housing bubble, particularly here in the UK. It's a very, that's their source of, they believe, wealth. But as I really believe, is once all these governments are in debt and they need to pay it off, they come looking for whoever has it and whoever they can target. And when you own property, as many people in Germany did in the 1930s, the government just shows up with a tank, some soldiers, and takes it. That's it. They just take it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're getting to a period where this is going to be more of a factor. In other words, the debt problem is so enormous that, yeah, you will see this type of confiscation. I mean, you see it gradually in the U.S., the confiscation of property. And we talked about this on this show a few years ago. Remember, yeah, in Connecticut, the eminent domain was used by the government to declare that.
The Supreme Court made a law that basically that it was like basically a Starbucks and hotel complex, that they said that the rights of these corporations, because they might provide jobs to the area, and they said they were providing something like 60 or 100 jobs. It wasn't that much, but they could force these people out. And, I know this area, so it was very, very attractive. Working class, but very attractive, nice area along the sea, along the Long Island Sound. But, 10 years later, 8 years later, it's abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
But the precedent is set.
That's right. That's right. And it was interesting, that conversation we had this past week with the French lawyer who was looking at the American system and said that the two most valuable rights that Americans hold are freedom of speech and private property rights. And based on that, he was cooking up new ways to go after the banking transgressors. But he said it starts from a place where we noticed in from here in France, looking at America, that the two rights that they hold most dear are free speech and private property rights. And he said because of the free speech rights, of course, this was where corporations who were looking to, we've seen this in the last few years, looking to take more control of the internet, because they don't like the idea of it being in control of the people. They'd rather have more private control of the internet. They use the free speech rights and they overcome the free speech rights by bringing in constantly haranguing with this idea that the internet is a place for obscenity, and in so doing, they need to shut down the public's access to the internet and give it to the corporations to protect the public from obscenity. And they know that it's a hot flash issue for Americans, and so they use
hot flash,
it.
Hot button.
Hot button.
Hot flash is like when you're having your menopause.
Oh, I could be having male menopause.
But we go into this on our show on Tuesday in the Kaiser Report. It's a very interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm.
All these theories are expanded on. I think we should not go too much into it because we want to save it for that big show.
Great. What else?
And there was another, I was talking about oil in the Gulf of Mexico. Is several people have asked me or, you know, posted links to this bacteria that eats oil.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, but there's a company that holds a patent on it. And they've basically been sitting on it for the last decade or two. So it's not being deployed in the Gulf of Mexico because there's been no work done on it. And also, I guess it's genetically modified in some way, and none of the oil companies want it used because there's been no work done on it. It's a bacteria designed to attack and eat oil, and so they don't know if it's going to get into their actual wells, if it'll expand exponentially and like take over start eating their product. So, but again, this patent of a potentially useful technology, or it's not even technology, it's life, that it's not being used because there's a patent on which somebody is sitting.
Yeah, well, I've said that the linchpin activist issue is the intellectual property issue. I think this is the key for all issues. Intellectual property, the patent and copyright laws are too strict. They should be repealed, rolled back. And to get this stuff back into the public domain, and you'd have a lot more vibrant intellectual society, and problem solving would happen a lot faster. I mean, you get this sense that the society in the U.S. and in the U.K. is coming to a grinding halt, that there's paralyzation is set in, social unrest is rising, nobody seems to be able to do anything, especially in the Gulf of Mexico. There's this growing angst that just people are just standing around. They're not really doing anything. And I think the primary reason is just this intellectual property problem, is that there's so many contractual obligations on so many of the technologies that could be used to clean up this mess that are not being released, or nobody knows who owns them at this point, or nobody knows who's getting the licensing fee. And so you end up with this standstill. And that can all be gotten away with by simply repealing the IP laws. You would increase the job market. I mean, all the companies that sit on, for example, the drug companies who sit on these patents for years and years, if all that was gotten away with and reduced down to 1/10 of the current time frame, these huge drug companies would downsize incredibly, and they would lose thousands of jobs. However, there would be dozens of new startup drug companies to compete, and there would be the creation of many, many tens of thousands of jobs. So net-net, you would have a huge net gain in jobs. Intellectual property laws are probably the single greatest contributor to loss of job growth than anything else. And you don't have the competition, which you would have if you have a lot more players on the field competing, a lot more companies starting up. And the reason there's less of them is because all of the intellectual property is tied up on the for 100 years, lifetime plus 90 years in the case of copyright. Patents are similarly affected. This is a huge choke. It has a huge chokehold on economic growth, societal growth. And you get the sense that things are just stuck in the mud, a swamp. Nobody's doing anything, and the ecology is collapsing, and social unrest is rising.
Well, of course, and people often point out that had we had this system of patents and copyrights, none of the Industrial Revolution would have happened. None of the growth of our economies and societies would have happened at all.
Well, the term Yankee, which is what people refer to, Americans in the North, especially the Yankees or the New York Yankees, this is Dutch, meaning pirate or thief, because when America started its Industrial Revolution, they stole everything from Europe, and thus they got the nickname Yankee or thief or pirate. And, you know, there's a huge tradition in reusing ideas, reinterpreting ideas, and creating new things with old ideas and existing ideas. This is DNA wants to replicate itself. That's human life. To retard the basic need of DNA to replicate is committing intellectual and physical suicide. And this is the sense you get. This people are become zombied out, walking the landscape, unable to grow intellectually because everything has come to a great big standstill because of all the copyright folks sitting on their incredibly draconian copyright laws, and they just refuse to allow anyone to have any original thinking. And it's just become this mud pit of recycled bad ideas while all the good stuff's locked up on the corporate balance sheets.
Well, here in Britain, they wanted to overturn it, but I'm going to go to there. Oh, by the way, you know, the British right here in London, Resonance 104.4 FM, I know there's lots of young men out there very, very happy for the return, they hope, of the Cold War. You see how the whole blogosphere and the Twitterosphere and the all driven by young men are very, very happy with this story of the 10, 11 alleged spies, mm-hmm. Russian spies. They're all very happy that the whole, you know, Russian babes, everybody's focusing on Anna Chapman, this attractive Russian who spent many years here in London, apparently. So MI5 is jumping on the case. They're investigating Anna's time in London.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, they're all very excited about this. I think it's a return of, John Stewart covered this last night too. Mm-hmm. It's a war that people understand. It's not real. It's kind of fake. They prefer that fake war. If you're going to have a fake war, the war on terror is fake,
mm-hmm.
but there are some guys who, you know, take it seriously. There's, you know, it does inspire cult behavior. And, you know, once you stir up religious fundamentalism, you're people are wacky. When it's just an economic thing.
Mm-hmm. Espionage. And it's a lot more attractive. The women are much more intriguing. And I agree with you that this is marking a turning point, that we're going to move away now from the bearded fanatic to now a whole new chapter in creating a new synthetic enemy. I'm going to go back to the Cold War. And, it's a nice change. I mean, the players are playing the game in exactly the same way. The people stealing wealth are continuing to steal wealth in the same old ways, but this will dress it up in a new 2010 version.
Exactly. Plus, you know, you do get the sense of all the American press are calling, like, it's like a John le Carré novel. It's like a Robert Ludlum novel. They're always, it's a story. And young men who might want to join the army have a very, they're secretly hope, of course, inside that a Russian Anna Chapman-like woman will come target them and sleep with them in order to get information. There's more of this drama involved that people, you know, can engage more of their senses in rather than just fear and hatred towards another religious.
Yeah, you remember, you know, Cold War, all these fat, pasty-faced American British spies were getting, seduced by these hot Russian seductresses. And this, obviously, for a lot of the geeks and hackers and pirates out there, this is very appealing.
Exactly. And look, remember, we've discussed this on Resonance 104.4 FM and our Truth About Market show right here, is that when the Russians allegedly nuked a hotel right across from somebody in a hotel right across from the U.S. Embassy in central London, the whole population didn't freak out and get afraid to get on the metro or the London Underground or buses. you know, they weren't terrified.
If
some bearded guy with a religious cause had done it, they would have been completely terrified.
Right. You make a good point. I mean, here you have all this hysteria over Iran that might develop a nuclear weapon someday. And whereas right across the street from the U.S. Embassy in London, there was a nuclear attack against somebody in a sushi restaurant who then died using nuclear weapons. But, you know, nobody batted an eye. It was perfectly acceptable. Just another day at the office. You know, that's the power of having this new Cold War, is you get away with a lot more damage. I mean, and I think just the whole, you know, the whole period we just ended, it just got... There's a certain amount of fatigue. There's only so many times you can put up the those jihadi videos and stuff on TV, and it's just people are worn out from them. They're not having the effect of scaring anybody anymore.
Yeah, and well, this is, I'm sure the military-industrial complex guys were lobbied by other groups, you know, because the fake war on terror was just causing too much economic damage to other industries, like the airline industry, like the entertainment industry, like the Olympics industry. Remember how in the 80s the Olympics were giant because of course it was us versus the communists, so you were engaged because you wanted to see the East Germans and the Russians and the Czechs and all these, you know, the big thing was that they were all in steroids and all the women looked like men and how could they be like this, you know, and it was real competition. With, you know, there's none of that in the Olympics, so nobody watches mm-hmm. them anymore. It's yeah. like it's there's no big
The Iranians don't have much of a ski team.
No, but the you know, it's well, there's also other countries. I'm talking about Afghanistan, Iraq. You
they
know.
Don't have any good Olympic athletes.
But it's not even that. It's Al-Qaeda. It's Taliban.
Al-Qaeda doesn't field Olympic volleyball.
So Osama bin Laden, the alleged Al-Qaeda master of the alleged group Al-Qaeda, would mm-hmm. make a good volleyball player. He's very tall.
Yeah, or basketball, maybe, you know, but they just don't develop, you know, these sports in these countries, so they're not in the Olympics. You know, is Angelina Jolie in a new blockbuster film that features her as a Russian spy? That's my understanding.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't checked it out.
Yeah, that's what I hear. That's a big Hollywood blockbuster movie coming. She's a Russian spy. The rumor or the insinuation was that this whole Russian spy thing was actually, it's been a marketing ploy. It's like one of those mm-hmm. Online marketing things that goes on that you see.
Online games.
Well, it's an online game, but also tied to a marketing story for this new film.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, you know, you do have Ari Emanuel, who runs Hollywood. His brother, Rahm Emanuel, runs the White House.
Mm-hmm.
So it's between these two brothers feeding, you know, yeah, feeding each other's industry.
Is it a marketing stunt to implicate an entire country by rounding up some fake spies to help a Hollywood blockbuster? I mean, it's a relatively cheap way to promote the movie, I would think.
But it's also another way to attack the internet, I would think, because look, these alleged spies, they were there to gather information that you can find on any Twitter stream of any of these people. They were trying to get close to important people, not just politicians, but important people to see what they think, their innermost thoughts and stuff. Well, yeah. They all tweet it now.
Right. Well, it has that Dr. Evil aspect to it where it's just like, I just learned that somebody in America thinks that the nuclear bombs are being held in the basement of the store. Like, yeah, dude, I just saw it on Twitter. Yeah, I just had 57 tweets about that.
Yeah, but all, yeah, so all these journalists, all these politicians, everybody tweets like, oh, I just came out of a meeting at the Senate subcommittee on, you know, technology, whatever, or banking, and this is what happened. And they tweet it there. You don't have to go try to figure, you know, take this person out to lunch, pretend to be interested in them, have sex with them in order to find out what they just tweeted.
So that's interesting. Again, the need to break down the walls that are keeping all of the intellectual property behind bars. You know, we got to release the intellectual property. And that is a huge, I think the British people are right in that the one law that they want Cameron to repeal is the latest law that strengthened intellectual property law. And the British people, once again, have shown their high intellect and social justice by zeroing in on the single greatest point of freedom that could be enacted.
Yeah, but now they're coming after you. All you young men out there, you know you want to be abused and deceived by a red-headed Russian spy. Mm. And that's what your government's counting on. They're going to come after you with this because they saw that, you know, you couldn't even fantasize about any of the any of your enemies, your so-called enemies in Afghanistan or Pakistan or Iraq, because you can't see the women. So now here you've got to, you know, that you have these young men who are fantasizing about being abused by spending the rest of their lives in jail because of some red-headed Russian. You can really see that. I believe it.
Yeah, I think so. I totally buy into this, that there's just been a recasting of the problem using the femme fatales and Russian chicks to reinvent and to recreate some of the thrill of fighting the perceived bad guys, because the current, it's just run out of steam. People are just, all the video games that they could have invented, they invented, you know, and all the movies that they were going to make have been made, and all the shock headlines that have been shockingly headlined have been headlined, and they got to move on now. I mean, you need a new, fresh calendar of terrorist people to watch, and these white chicks from Moscow could be the trick.
Yeah, well, they don't even want terrorists. They want, like, a fake, you know, a less real threat. They want something that is a little bit more
comforting. Yeah, well, I think it'll work. You know, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm already intrigued. I'm intrigued by the by this whole thing.
Well, it'd encourage people to come offline, so stop tweeting so much and using Facebook and stuff like that, because mm-hmm. if you give away all your secrets, mm-hmm. you're not going to be seduced by a Russian spy.
But I think that's the point, though, isn't it? I mean, they want to be seduced.
So that's why I'm saying is, like, they're encouraging you to go offline, not to put so many of your secrets there. Mm. Because if it's already there for anybody to read, you're not going to be seduced. What's the point of seducing you if you've already, if they could just log on and go to Twitter and see what you're thinking?
Now, the woman that's got all the attention, last I checked, she's missing.
I think she's in custody in the U.S.
Ah, okay.
I think they did also release somebody on bail. But, no, the guy who went missing was in Cyprus, the so-called mastermind.
Okay.
Which looks like it was, you know, it happened during, while Bill Clinton was meeting with Putin. And it seems like it was kind of set up. The Americans are pretending to be shocked that the Cypriots gave this guy bail. And sure enough, he jumped bail and... The articles are saying that Russian intelligence would have whisked him away. But, I mean, it seems obvious that they let him go.
Well, the only piece of hard information that I saw trickle through was that there was an interest by the handlers of these spies in what was happening in the gold market. Did you see that?
Yeah, that's correct. And sure enough, people have been noting how much gold Russia's been buying every single month for the last... 5 or 6 months, including a big purchase in May, the last known recorded date.
Right. So gold, Russia's been accumulating gold, and they're probably the most aggressive central bank in the world buying gold right now.
Mm-hmm.
As far as intrigue goes, we know that it was last month when a whistleblower in London was testifying to the CFTC about the market rigging going on in the silver futures market over there at the London Bullion Markets Association. Bullion Markets Association. And Gary Gensler, who is the CFTC head, former Goldman Sachs guy, has yet to take any action. But that guy the next day got hit by a car in London. And now he came out and said, yes, he thinks that that was related to his testimony to the CFTC. So that's related to the suppression of precious metals, because precious metals are the antithesis of paper money, and the world runs on paper money in terms of the oligarchs in place in Washington. And so there is obviously a lot of intrigue between bullion market manipulation, fiat currency, oligarchs, what's happening in Russia, and the only piece of information to come out of the scandal is the focus on precious metals.
Yeah, that's another positive for London right here, is that, you know, Cold War sort of stuff, the major battleground for intrigue was here in London, of course. This is like, it's going to reemploy lots of people in intelligence. You have lots of double agents. Look at all the novels from Graham Greene. And, you know, it was a good time for culture. It was all the James Bond sort of stuff. You know, it did expand your culture. And you know, the bumblingness of the typical British spy works well in the Cold War scenario. It doesn't work well when it's against guys who can fight and live on, you know, ice cubes in a cave.
The spy who came in from the cold. Did you ever see that movie, Richard Burton?
Oh yeah. Yes, Max, I have.
We've seen it a couple of times.
That's correct.
He's my favorite actor, I think, of the past 50 years.
Oh really? Yeah. Yeah, he was he's very underrated. Other people overshadow him.
Yeah, he really had a kind of FU attitude toward the whole thing. He never really bothered to play the game too hard, but his performances are timeless and impeccable. And of course, he's in one of the best war movies ever made, Where Eagles Dare.
Oh no, don't play the music. Max plays that music all the time. But that reminds me that the FU attitude is, and speaking of Russia, did you see this Russian mathematician who won this very prestigious mathematics prize? And it comes with $1 million.
Right.
And he just rejected it. He lives in obscurity out in St. Petersburg somewhere. And he said he rejected it because he doesn't believe in this stupid prize and you know, basically just insulted people.
Well, also, yeah, I mean, once you, if you live without money,
yeah,
and after a while you realize you don't need it.
Exactly.
I mean, people live without money for hundreds of thousands of years.
That's true.
Millions of years. I mean, money is a relatively new phenomenon, and most of it is it does absolutely no good whatsoever. It's unneeded. It's useless. It doesn't really do anything, really.
So if he had been given $1 million, he might start worrying about keeping up with the Joneses and is property speculating and stuff like that, rather than focusing on these mathematical equations.
Yeah, and you get harassed by brokers on Wall Street calling you. You know, you got an idea for you to put this money here, but you know, it's a big hassle. Who needs it? Go drop dead. You know. Well, I think that's going to... Do we do 58 on this one?
Oh, Max, what is it with you and the times on our radio shows? You just have no memory.
No,
yes,
no,
we closed the show now in exactly 10 seconds.
Well, I guess that's going to do it then for this week. Truth About Markets with Max and Stacey and Residence 104.4. Until next time, this is Max. Bye, y'all!